welcome back to the MCU for Dummies. I am dummy number one, Ken. That is dummy number two, Lewis. And we have a very, very special joint episode for you here tonight. We are tackling two duds at once. And they are the two best of friends, you could say. Thor and Hulk, the Incredible Hulk, and then Thor 1 are going to be a little bit of a joint venture here, Lou. I know you just watched the Hulk for the first time, so we're going to let you carry the freight for the Hulk conversation, and then I'll pick up the slack to do Thor. But before we get into it, Lou, just really quick thoughts on how these two characters, who are so weird in their first movies, eventually become really good friends in Thor Ragnarok and beyond. How did, like, if somebody told you, somebody told 15-year-old Lou, who just watched The Incredible Hulk for the first time with Ed Norton, that Hulk and the other guy who was in that weird movie with that giant mechanical thing as a weird Norse god fighting in New Mexico or wherever, we're going to be best friends. What would you say to that?
Oh, you mean Banner?
Yeah, it's weird. I think your question was just mainly around like the Thor-Hulk relationship before we go into it. Yeah. I mean, it makes the most sense. I mean, you also have like the Hulk, the Bruce Banner relationship with Black Widow and all that type of stuff too.
Yeah.
But it's cool that like the two most pronounced alphas, I mean, obviously Steve Rogers is the alpha of the group, but like the two most pronounced, like I'm the most muscular and then like I'm the most masculine, biggest and green. Yeah. Are like just always at like odds here. And there's so many like different parallels with like Thor literally questioning if he's worthy to take up the hammer. And then the Hulk always coming to grips with this whole identity of who is he Bruce, is he the Hulk here, and it's a really tough journey to get there. But once Ragnarok comes, we won't do any spoilers for that, it's such a sweet perfect moment, and it really plays out well in like Infinity War, Endgame. Again, we'll talk more about like the Hulk's character timeline, because his dedicated movie space really does end at the Incredible Hulk, and there's a bit of a transition to a new actor. But then Marvel does a very nice job of at least telling you what the Hulk storyline is throughout other movies too.
Absolutely. So why don't we jump? We got two movies to cover. These are two very large men, so they take up plenty of space. So why don't you kick us into Hulk world, Lou?
Okay, this will be a tight review. Okay, so The Incredible Hulk, starring Edward Norton, comes out in 2008. Okay, budget of $130 million, grosses $260 million, so it doubles its money, but by no means is that anywhere near what we see in traditional Marvel movies today in the billions or high $900 million or so. So this movie at the time, I remember when it came out, I did not want to see it. Just let me give you some like color on how bad this movie is perceived to folks here. I got a girlfriend who does not watch Marvel movies, and I tell her I'm watching The Hulk, and she's like, oh, I saw that when it came out. And I was like, yeah, it's really bad. And she's like, I remember it being really bad. Why are you watching it? So it's just this like thing that people know of as a bad movie. It's really rough on the eyes. The coloring of the movie is just super early 2000s. I texted you this. It's like one of those movies where like if an older relative was watching me for the day, like an uncle or my dad or a grandfather, and he had that, like had this movie on the TV, it would look like any other Jason Bourne type movie of the 2000s. And that's very much what this movie's vibe is like. It's very Jason Bourne. It's very like spy thriller. I wouldn't say spy, but it's like foreign thriller in the beginning, where Ed Norton as Bruce Banner is stuck in Brazil, and there's these chases where he's jumping off buildings and such, and it's just like a very weird tone. So the movie starts with us receiving flashbacks to Bruce Banner receiving this gamma ray treatment with just no background. There's no explanation into what's going on. There's no backstory into how he becomes the Hulk. We just infer that Arwen from Lord of the Rings, Liv Tyler, who is the supporting actress here in the film, is part of this initiative that eventually makes Bruce Banner into the Incredible Hulk. We don't see the Hulk in his Hulk form until like the 30-minute mark. It's very Frankenstein-esque, him hiding in the shadows, a lot of suspense being built up here. Bruce Banner is working in a Pepsi-like bottling plant in Brazil, trying to stay hidden. He bleeds a bit, so we know that his blood, obviously he caused a lot of attention to his blood, so we know that his blood has some sort of repercussions if anyone were to ingest it, and it ends up being Stan Lee, who drinks it out of a soda, and I think he like ends up passing out. I probably looked away from that moment because I was texting, because this movie was not capturing my attention, as you can imagine here. But, you know, the Hulk storyline, I feel like, is well known. Like, a science experiment goes wrong. I feel like, Ken, you'll bring this up a bit, but, you know, the gamma ray experiment was a failure of the attempt of trying to create the super soldier serum. Hulk is viewed as this bad guy, the Liv Tyler character, who is, I believe, named Betty Ross. Betty Ross. So Betty Ross is the love interest in this story. She's a cellular biologist, reading this from Wikipedia, of Edward Norton's Bruce Banner here. She is the one that is the saving grace for Bruce Banner, the one that believes that he actually has good in him and he's just a misunderstood character. Now, Betty Ross's father is Thunderbolt Ross, right? Yep. Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross, who becomes a little more well known to the story of the MCU in Age of Ultron with the Sokovia Accords. So Thunderbolt Ross's character, this hungry general military industrial complex like figure that wants to stop the Hulk and find a way to get this gamma ray treatment under wraps so that they can create more powerful soldiers, is just trying to kill the Hulk. They're at a college campus and he's just like unloading the military on the Hulk, which is very early 2000s. That's like very much like we love to see helicopters and big guns and like shells being shot at this Hulk. The Hulk obviously prevails. The Hulk then takes Liv Tyler away with him. So I'm gonna like leave a lot of gaps here. This guy, he's a soldier. His name is Blonsky. That's like really all we refer to him as. Terrible villain, short man, just like not getting good traction in the military here. He thinks that there's something greater for him out there, and he ends up taking this like baby dose of the super soldier serum. Does the traditional like runs across the field at this ridiculous speed that we see Steve Rogers do in future movies too. The story builds up with Blonsky eventually becoming the Abomination, which is like the Hulk, but much worse, looks ugly, looks like my big toe. And then they had this big fight in New York, because that's, of course, where everybody fights and such. And the Abomination is this combination of the super soldier serum and then some like mixed gamma ray treatment by this crazy scientist that it seems like this new storyline enters the film at literally 20 minutes to go. Yeah. And you're just like, where is this? So all in all, that is my chopped up version of the synopsis. The movie, from a director's standpoint, is very rough on the eyes. It's very dark. The Hulk is not a convincing character. The Joe Rogan interview with Ed Norton proves that Ed Norton really did not want to be in this role and kind of just kept going with it, and hence why we got this Mark Ruffalo softer character down the line here. But man, was this a tough movie. I had to watch in like 15, 20 minute intervals and do little breaks here. And then at some point I was just like, all right, we can finish it. Very tough.
It's frustrating because it's got some things in it, right? It's got some things that are really good. It's got a lot of things that are really bad. And I think, you know, you mentioned one of the things that I notice about this movie all the time. And it's one of those things that I think follows maybe the biggest difference between Marvel and DC, right? A lot of the things that we dislike about the DCEU versus the MCU is its color scheme. And we are doing a superhero dumb movie. Right? This is stupid. There's a giant green man who supposedly is attracted to this little brunette woman, right? And she's cool with it, right? And we're supposed to suspend our disbelief that this man called the Hulk can exist, right? And fight and turn back into a person and his pants never fall off, right? Like, we're supposed to have this suspension of belief that this is possible. But the movie is so dark. Why is it grounded in that realism? And it's the same thing with the DCEU. We see that all the time in the Batman movies, Batman versus Superman, the first version of the Justice League, which may be the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, all of those films are on this like grayscale, and it's dark and it's dreary, and it's, I understand you want to make it feel more real. You want to like give it these stakes of realism and of like actual despair and things like that. But it's like, why? It's fucking Superman. It's the fucking Hulk. Why are we sad? I don't get it. So that movie being so dark, you know, you could maybe give me some thematic response if you wanted. I don't know why I look like Patrick Starr right now, but like, if you wanted to like give me some sort of like thematic,
put your hands down.
I'm sorry, I'm stretching. If you wanted to like give me this like weird thematic, dissertation on how the Hulk is viewed as like a villain, and it's like maybe more of a horror movie than it is a superhero movie, then sure, I would read it, only if it were like 100 words, because anything longer than that is just bullshit. You know it as well as I know it. It was just a bad decision. Is a giant green man supposed to be wearing very bright purple shorts? It's supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be out there having fun. That's the whole point of this thing. Yes, you can make it real. You can put character growth. You can put love stories and emotional beats into a fun story, as you then see, right? And we're going to talk about Thor in a minute. But Lou talked about the character arc of Hulk taking place outside of Hulk-centric movies, right? Which it does. And you can see how emotional people can be about a giant green man in purple shorts in a movie like Thor Ragnarok, which is like the most colorful movie on the face of the earth, right? So like, don't give me this, like it's needed for his, oh, it's showing his inner despair about himself and how he views himself. And that's why he's treated like a horror movie villain. And like, shut the fuck up. Okay. It's just a stupid decision to have it be pitch fucking black the whole damn movie. It doesn't give to a good film. Even the scenes that aren't about the Hulk, like the military scenes, that like it, everything just feels like they didn't turn the lights on, right? And it like, it's that type of thing with like the early 2000s acting, which sucks, and the story beats, which were clearly in there just to hit certain beats of the story to get to the final battle, like you said, like introducing new storylines with like half an hour left of the movie. Like, it just is not a good film, and that's okay. There are a lot of not good films in this MCU, and we're talking about them, right? We talked about Iron Man 2, not a good movie, right? We're going to talk about Iron Man 3, also not a good movie. We're going to talk about Thor in about 15 minutes, not a good movie, right? But at the same time, you can have not a good movie and produce a character that is worth caring about. A character that has grounding in the universe, a character that has belief behind it, even though we're suspending our disbelief, right, to enjoy this movie about a giant green man. And the Hulk does none of that. It just doesn't do well. It's disappointing because I think the Hulk is like a lot of people's favorite hero, right? Like, you think back to when you're a kid, you knew who the Hulk was. Right? Like, I knew who the Hulk was. It was Lou Ferrigno, and he was the guy in The King of Queens. But like, you knew who the Hulk was. So it's disappointing that movie was such shit, because it was pretty shitty.
Yeah, Edward Norton gets past old Hulk with just a pizza. And Lou Ferrigno's like, oh, I like a pizza. Yeah. I mean, Kevin Feige was involved in this, also Stan Lee. And there's a lot of politics around the Hulk character. Like, it's not fully owned by Marvel. Universal has the ownership of Hulk and basically the rights to say if they're going to approve a future storyline here. This movie was directed by Louis Leterrier, who honestly doesn't go on to do a tremendous amount of other follow-ups in this realm. So Marvel definitely did get better at picking better directors that could kind of scale across. I mean, you think about Favreau getting hit, and then the Russo brothers coming into the fold and produce, and then you got like Ryan Coogler, and then you got like more diversity coming through here. This had to take a second to grow. I mean, Marvel was going bankrupt in the early 2000s here, so there were many conflicting storylines, and I think one out of the 23 movies can kind of get a pass with it being the Incredible Hulk.
Well, let's be honest. Maybe about like 6 or 7 of those movies get a pass because of how good a lot of the other ones were. And I also want to just give you a couple of updates because we did just come off the Mets Exchange podcast. Go listen. But Corey Kluber is now through 8 no-hit innings, and the Mets have lost on a walk-off home run by Mr. Ronald Acuna Jr. So if you want to splice that one into the old podcast, go ahead. But if not, maybe we get some crossover listeners. Who knows?
Yeah. If you're into Mets or baseball, then go check out the Mets Exchange podcast on Spotify.
You got it, buddy. Podcast. There he goes. I knew he would come back
to the Incredible Hulk. I echo your segment on, you know, we talked like in a couple podcasts ago about this idea that when the Marvel Cinematic Universe first kicked off to try to figure out what was going to be phase one, there was a good deal of research done into children's habits with toys and which one of the toys like would be most receptive in like a toy store. Yeah. And that was obviously Iron Man. He's red, he's yellow, he's a robot, it's cool. Hulk is probably like number 2 on the list, you know, like Hulk Smash, that's like a line. Remember Hulk gloves?
I do, yeah. I'm telling you, the Hulk
perfectly marketed.
Hulk was the only guy I knew before the MCU. Like, I knew Iron Man existed, I knew Captain America existed, but I didn't know that they were Marvel. I knew Spider-Man existed, but I didn't know he was Marvel. Like, I didn't know where any of these guys sat, right? DC versus Marvel or Capcom, right? Like, I remember those games that I used to like just smash the buttons on, but I didn't know any of the characters except for the Hulk. And I knew he was a Marvel guy. I had one Marvel comic book. That's a guy who, like, that's why it's so disappointing to me, though.
Yeah, and Marvel has done a great job at, like, just marketing its stories, too. Because I remember there being a point, too, where I was not really aware of DC. There was a video game that came out for Xbox 360. It was, like, DC versus Marvel. And I didn't know who, like, was on which side. Now it's very clear because of the marketing, the branding, the packaging in Disney Plus. They've done such a great job where I feel like I'm very confident in listing who's who. But I digress back to Hulk here. The Hulk character is challenging because it is a character that is kind of just crazy and has lost himself. And by all means, that's very much still accurate in the later movies, but they do transition in Ragnarok where he's speaking in full sentences. And then he becomes Smart Hulk and he's taking pictures at a diner. But in like the early stages, like he's really just grunting and like Hulk smashing. And, you know, you don't really get a lot of that character building until you get Mark Ruffalo in Avengers, where now you're like, oh, he's a scientist. Right. And you get glimpses that Edward Norton's character is smart. Right. He's like making his own in Brazil. He kind of speaks Portuguese. He's Mr. Green, communicating through this like weird IBM computer and Brazilian internet. So like he's smart, but he's not like Tony Stark smart where he's making artificial intelligence Ultron here with the Jarvis system. So there's a lot of gaps here, but I feel like it's the Incredible Hulk. I'll defend it on 2 points. I'll defend it on the fact that it did not seem like Edward Norton wanted to be involved in the movie. Sure. And perhaps, you know, in today's age, they just pay a guy like that. Like, I'm just making this up, like $100 million. And they say, go away because our branding is so important to us that we cannot afford to have somebody that's not fully in this. And so maybe that happens because back then you really didn't have like the ability to kind of call those shots there. And number 2, I think it really shows like what we take for granted and even like the beginning movies too, because although Thor is a bad movie, it's still above the Hulk. And even Avengers, it's still above the Hulk. There are still scenes that I connect with more emotionally. And the perfect test is like if I had to rewatch these movies with a child, I would rather watch Iron Man 2, and Thor way before the Hulk. I'm actually hoping the kid never finds out the Hulk movie exists and that we just kind of like he or she doesn't even question like how we get from to the Avengers, like where the Hulk come in. So that's kind of my take on this.
So let's give this a quick wrap and then we'll jump into Thor. So The Incredible chronologically, or release order, I should say, based on the actual Marvel Phase 1, right? Iron Man and The Incredible Hulk both came out in 2008. If we're talking chronological, which is how we're constructing the podcast here, The Incredible Hulk kind of takes place after Iron Man 2, before Thor, before the Avengers. It's very unspecified just because of all the characters that are not included in that movie, because they didn't know exactly where it would fit while they were making it. So it's kind of an unspecified time, but it does take place pre-Avengers, obviously, and maybe around the similar time as the Thor movie. Here's the last thing I'll say about the Incredible Hulk film. It did its job. It maybe did it poorly, but it introduced a major character to the universe. It also introduced Thunderbolt Ross, who may or may not be making a triumphant return in Phase 4 with the Thunderbolts after, you know, Falcon Winter Soldier, Captain America Winter Soldier, whatever you want to call it. That guy, Mr. Ross, Secretary of State, Thunderbolt Ross, was a recurring character throughout the MCU films, right? So it did its job and it introduced some very important themes about who he is, right? Thunderbolt Ross is as a character, about who the Hulk is as a character. And then, like you said, Lou, they did a phenomenal job of not, I think their work of not just jumping in and doing Hulk 2 with Mark Ruffalo before Avengers came out, right, was the right call, and telling his story off screen through exposition dumps was maybe a little bit easier because you knew where you were going at that point. You knew you were going to get Ragnarok. You knew you were going to get a Smart Hulk at some point. And you're saying, do we have enough before that to make another non-bust, right? Is that possible? The answer was no, and I think they made the right call to just kind of let it slide and tell that story with off-screen events.
Yeah, well, that's a Feige special, just slipping around Universal and kind of maintaining the story, because they could still tell the story of Hulk. They just couldn't have those standalone movies there. So kudos to him. I think the cinematic universe is better for it, and I think at this point no one's craving a follow-up Hulk. Ken, you forgot to mention the stinger at the end where Thunderbolt Ross...
Yeah, Mr. Iron Man, yeah.
Yeah, and Tony Stark kind of walks in to just show you that these movies are going to relate to each other somehow. So that's kind of cool to see Robert Downey Jr. enter a bar. Thunderbolt Ross is drinking away his sorrows because of all of the chaos that has been caused because of the Hulk and the Abomination, all that type of stuff. Yep, and basically, Robert Downey Jr.'s rendition of Iron Man's like, hey, we're getting a group together, alluding to the Avengers. So one could assume that that is how the Hulk eventually finds its way to the Avengers. And I guess the rest of the story.
Yeah, and it's and I'm happy you mentioned that, because I think it's one of the first times we can actually mention a post-credit scene, because of how we're doing the podcast chronologically. We definitely we can't mention certain post-credit scenes because they may not line up. So if you are watching chronologically, right, if you're going in the order that we're going, maybe skip the post-credit scenes. And then at the end, when you're all done and you're all end-gamed out, and then you watch Far From Home or whatever the Spider-Man movie is, then you can go back and look on YouTube and they'll give you a nice little compilation of all the end credit scenes, which are really cool if you're watching in release order, which I would suggest if you've seen them all already. But if you're watching for the first time, I say chronological is the best way to go. Okay, that's Incredible Hulk. Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate I appreciate you rewatching that, because, boy, I wasn't gonna. Thor. Another troubled man and another troubled film. And I will give a pretty loose, similar synopsis of the first Thor movie, including ice giants, the boys, if you will. So Mr. Thor grows up in Asgard. We are introduced. This is, if we're, you know, it's not our first off-Earth film, if we're talking chronological, right? If that's how we're going. Captain America was Earth. Iron Man was Earth, Iron Man 2 was Earth, Incredible Hulk was Earth, Captain Marvel had a little bit of space to it, and you got some new worlds and things like that. But Thor is your introduction to Asgard, your introduction to the Norse god who is Thor, the Mjolnir, Odin, Loki, Natalie Portman, Kat Dennings, Dr. Selvig. What a huge movie this was, and what a huge flop it was. Okay. Just so many important things, including the ether, which gets introduced in the Dark World, I believe. The Tesseract, which continues to be like throughout the entirety of the MCU, continues to be like the main thing that people are worried about. Where's the Tesseract? Who's got the Tesseract? Like Thor introduces so many things. The Bifrost, it introduces just so many themes that carry throughout the entire 23 movie saga. So Thor opens up in Asgard. He's not worthy. He gets sent back. He gets banished to Earth. How lucky are we? On Earth, he meets Miss Natalie Portman. They start to rub some sticks together, make a fire. Some sparks are there with Natalie and Thor, and then they're kind of hanging on Earth, and your boy Loki is up in Asgard causing some fracas, and then crazy stuff ensues. They get themselves down to Earth. There's a big giant robot man who comes down to Earth. They battle him in New Mexico. You also, in this movie, I neglected to mention, you meet Agent Coulson for the first time in our set of movies. And you also meet your boy, Jeremy Renner, Hawkeye, is introduced into the MCU as the man protecting Mjolnir from like the outside world with his stupid bow and arrow. As it sits there, as Natalie Portman and Kat Dennings are trying to do some studies on it. So, Lou, when did you first see this Thor film? And did you think that was... Because we know now what a good Thor movie is, right? Thor Ragnarok is a good movie. Thor and Thor the Dark World are bad movies. Boring at best. What did you think of Thor the first time you saw it?
I saw it when it came out, pretty close to the original Inception, similar to like Iron Man. It was just like a great standalone movie, and I had no idea that it was going to continue to keep going. So big fan of what... I think I saw it like over like a Christmas break, way past it coming out, like when I was in college. Wow. I think I got like a bunch of superhero movies, and I think in that lineup I watched the Christian Bale Batman, which are my favorite, and then I watched Thor.
Sorry.
And then I watched The Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds, which is terrible. It was so bad. But I remember Thor, like, overall just being funny. I will put him in the same classification as Robert Downey Jr. to Iron Man and Steve Rogers to Captain America. Chris Hemsworth really owns the character of Thor, and he has very good moments, like when he's drinking the hot chocolate and he's like, "What is this?" And he smashes the cup. And then I literally die laughing when he walks into that bike shop and he goes, "I need a horse."
Yes.
And or no, he walks into like a pet shop and he's like, "We have dogs and cats and rabbits." And he's like, "Can I ride one?"
There are actually some really funny scenes. That one is very funny. And then the one where he's first at that restaurant and he gets a beer and he slams the glass on the ground. Those are very funny.
Yeah, so there's some humor in Thor being this like weird alien from, you know, like outside, and obviously like the science part of it is being cool, like the astrophysicist part of like what's going on here, like humans trying to come to grips with like what is going on with honestly the first rendition of the MCU where something just doesn't make sense. Like,
yeah,
everybody knows Tony Stark is smart. They know he's rich, so like everything seems conceivable. Steve Rogers, everyone gives him a pass because he has this like serum thing. He was basically just like hopped up on good old American steroids here. But the Thor doesn't make sense,
right?
And we need the help of these scientists to kind of like get us into like what could be the possibility here. So there's a lot of like little tongue-in-cheek cute moments of Thor. I think respectfully, this is The movie's fine as far as duration goes. It is not long. It's maybe an hour 40 with no credits. So that's good. It gets to the point. It introduces his character. I think Thor is tremendously important. But overall, I liked it. You know, wasn't really aware of where things were going. Dark World, the sequel, is very rough. But Ragnarok is worth the wait, too. But I'll tell you, Ken, I'm playing God of War for PlayStation here, and it's this main character, Kratos, who's a god, and it's a lot of, like, Norse stuff, and there's a lot of crossovers of Norse mythology to what one might understand from Thor in the MCU. The tree of knowledge, Jotunheim, Odin, Thor, like, just, like, all these references and stuff, so... I think Thor does a really cool job at explaining the different realms that are parts of Norse mythology here. You forgot to mention that Loki is his brother.
Yeah, fair enough. Like
a good like black and white combo.
I thought we simped on Tom Hiddleston last week. I didn't think we needed to do that again.
Yeah, I mean, one could never simp enough about Tom Hiddleston. But, you know, that's important too because Thor is like total opposite end of the spectrum here with Loki. So,
yeah.
That's like my synopsis in a nutshell there.
Here's what
overall,
I was
like, this is fine.
Yeah, here's another question I have for you. What if what if I told weird college vacation Lou before he watches the Green Lantern that this Thor movie is going to have not only the titular Thor, his brother Loki, the astrophysicist's best friend Kat Dennings, who's in WandaVision, it's going to have Loki who gets his own show. It's going to have a hammer that is a major plot point throughout an entire 23-movie saga. It's going to have a Tesseract Mind Stone thing that is going to drive the entirety of a 23-movie saga. It's going to have a Dr. Selvig who is going to be a major phase one plot point through the end of the Avengers. It's going to introduce the Bifrost. It's going to introduce Asgard. It's going to introduce the Frost Giants and even Thanos, right, to this universe. Could you even have fathomed that this movie can and introduce you to Hawkeye and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Coulson? Could you have seen that this movie had all of this packed into it, which was so important for the rest of this whole shebang?
Well, Thor was the branch to get you to the Avengers movie. So at some point in life, I would love for there to be a book that kind of like walks through the Kevin Feige thought process of how this all played together. And I would not be surprised if Thor was the movie that they said, okay, we got something here. Let's start putting the pieces to this character. Thor is like the one character I know nothing about from the comics. I haven't read any Thor comic book here, so I don't know how much the movies fray from the actual canon that is within the comic books there. But they did a great job just packing in a lot of what would eventually set up the first Avengers movie, which would cap off phase one here. And honestly, like all the characters that are mentioned, like for as much as Thor kind of is a bore fest, there is so much nostalgia at basically every scene. And every character that is shown, you don't really mind seeing again. Like, you don't mind seeing Dr. Selvig go crazy in the second Thor. You don't mind seeing Kat Dennings in WandaVision. You think it's cool that she rises from intern to basically showing everyone what Wanda's going through. You like Loki with his new show coming out soon. So even Odin, like Anthony Hopkins's rendition of Odin is amazing over time. So, and then Natalie Portman, that's going to be popular. That's going to be important with Thor and Love of Thunder. So there's so much here. I think Thor was told in a compelling way. Like these phase one movies, like didn't really, they're never going to be like Oscar winning type stuff here, but one can't deny how important the first Thor is too, especially introducing two Infinity Stones in the first two movies of the Thor saga. So
no, absolutely, man. I don't think it's terrible,
but I would hate to rewatch it again with you.
Yeah, that's the problem, is that there's just so much. There's just so much in this story. And I think it shows that, and you know, we talked about Hulk earlier this episode. It feels like it was another world ago. But, you know, you talk about the Hulk movies. There was not enough there to carry a two-movie, three-movie saga for The Incredible Hulk. I don't think they could have pulled that off in a compelling way. But you talk about a character like Thor where there's just so much backstory there. There's so much exposition to dump. There's so much world building to be done. Same thing you think about like Wakanda, Black Panther, and you think about... give me another. You think about the Guardians of the Galaxy, right? And the world building that needs to be done to establish these people or these heroes or whatever as real, right? Quote unquote real, right? So like you need to build them out. You need to build out Wakanda. You need to build out how it exists within the world as we know it. It needs to build out how we know it within the MCU. Same thing to be said for Asgard, right? Like how does it tie in? Where is the grounding to Earth? Where is the, you know, what we get as science versus magic versus whatever else, right? And when you think about like the Thor arc, and that arc goes up and down.
Ken, I got to interrupt you here. I'll be the one to say it. Corey Kluber has thrown a no-hitter for the Yankees.
Hey, okay, so back-to-back nights with a no-hitter. That is absolutely insane.
Yeah, crazy.
Man, so did weird, it. Man.
All right, against the Rangers, who have been no-hit, I believe, twice this season. So
oof.
That is your quick jock update within nerd world. Let's go back to MCU.
Thank you, Lewis. Thank you, Lewis. Please don't put me in a garbage can, Lewis. Thank you. So... anyway, Thor's arc, and I believe arcs go like this or like that, whatever you want. Or how do arcs go?
I mean, it depends on the story the character is trying to tell.
It's is either it like an that?
Established character or someone who's more like
no, but I know I'm asking what is the shape of an arc?
Oh, it's like up and down. I mean, you want to get them to a certain point. So Thor's, I mean, right? Spoilers, but like Thor is to be like the leader of Asgard. It takes shape of some form, so the form to get him there is this arc. You want to go from point A to point B, Ken, and it has to. It's not a straight line.
An arc is a portion of the circumference of a circle.
Yeah, it's an arc. It's not like Noah's Ark.
So it goes up and down, whatever. Anyway, so in Thor's arc, right, there's just so much that needs to be introduced. There's so much world building that needs to be done that I think that they got themselves kind of bad. I'm getting notes on arc shapes from my producer over here. I've got a parabolic arc picture now. I'm going to get others. I can
show a parabola. I'm gonna leave.
So, but anyway, in Thor's arc, there's so much world building that needs to be done. There's so many things that need to be built into the MCU that there was enough there for a three movie run, as we've saw, and now we're seeing more, right? With Love and Thunder being number four, and then who knows where it goes from there. But the character of Thor going from movie A, right, where he's just a complete dick, for lack of a better term, to where he is at the end of Avengers Endgame is my favorite character arc of the entire MCU.
Oh, totally. He looks sick in Endgame. I mean, he's got crazy hair. I mean, yeah, it's like, it's really, as you go like further into the social media world and like people call out certain things, there's the Cap scene where he's literally just about to take on Thanos' army by himself. And then there's Thor that like he gets his crazy hair thing going on. He gets his ass kicked by Thanos. And there's like the perfect scene where Cap gets finally Mjolnir and Thor's like, I knew it. Those are some of like my favorite coming of age stories here that we see in the MCU here. And I feel like it just gives such a respect to the characters that the actors that play these characters too. Now, Chris Hemsworth, we mentioned on the last podcast, him and Tom Hiddleston playing Thor and Loki was a total shot in the dark here. And there were some talks that like Shia LaBeouf would be Loki. And I got to say, Marvel hit it out of the park here with the two castings of Thor and Loki, because Chris Hemsworth literally looks like whatever you would think is a Thor.
Yes.
Just a big piece of muscle with long blonde hair. I mean, Thor came out, that kicked off this whole like idea of like just Viking looking men. You had Noah Syndergaard for the Mets. Like, oh, he looks like Thor. So it's like this whole like power and control thing. And it's so perfect of how flawed this character is, especially emotionally. And how that plays into like his role of becoming the leader of his people. So I think we've said a lot about Thor here. none of us want to rewatch any of these movies. But I don't know how much, I mean, you've already echoed how important this movie is to the overall story. And a lot of the points that you've made, I've been like, oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. So all good points to be made.
Yeah. So here's what I'll say. And instead of, you know, we don't have to ask three big questions, because I think we're in pretty good shape with these two movies and where they stand in importance in the MCU. But the question I'll ask Lou is, I don't think we could have the rest of the MCU without Thor 1. I don't think you couldn't just dump the information in there at some point and say like, yeah, the Tesseract exists and there's this guy named Loki and he's crazy and he's here, he's a villain, and then like et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You couldn't do that. On the other hand, I think you could conceivably watch the entire MCU without watching The Incredible Hulk and you'd be just fine.
I mean, I did, so.
I think you'd be just fine. Yeah. You'd get introduced to Thunderbolt Ross at some point. Now, here's the thing. If Marvel wants to take this next phase into a Thunderbolts, right, comic-based story, then I will change my tune, because I will think you will have need to have seen how Mr. Thunderbolt Ross reacted to the super serum with his abomination pal to kind of get a feel for why he's putting together a Thunderbolts group. If they don't go that direction, then I would say that you could just skip it. But this guy seems to be coming back, man. Thunderbolt Ross is not leaving the MCU, right? He was in Civil War. He was in Infinity War. He is going to be in Black Widow. So, you know, like they're not accidentally putting him in stuff, right?
Yeah. And I misspoke. I said he was in Age of Ultron. You're right. He was actually in Civil War. So
yeah,
that's all I have to say from the Thor level.
Same here, my friend.
Yeah.
Same here. Right. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to bring up that one point. I keep seeing this thing on TikTok where the Marvel simps out there, us included, all want to see a movie of Steve Rogers, Captain America, returning the Infinity Stones back to their natural origin and how he carries his life out with Peggy Carter.
Yeah.
Aunt Peggy. And it's like, I don't think you could never say never with Chris Evans maybe coming back, but it's not a bad idea. And I think if a phase five, when there's like more stories that are already like planted, you could weave so much through that. And you got to think that someday they're going to call everyone back to the stable to do another Avengers type movie. And I don't know how that movie isn't just a blank check, because anytime they come out with one of those, it easily grosses $2 billion. So does Chris Evans eventually come back, and do you get some sort of movie where it's Captain America and the story of the return of the Infinity Stones?
The only reason I say no, and I would love to see, I think everybody would love to see it, right? So let me be clear when I say that I would also love to see it. The only reason I say no to it being a possibility is because Marvel has kind of backed itself into needing a little bit of ambiguity when it comes to the rules. They are about to introduce a multiverse. They are about to introduce quantum mania and like multiverse and quantum field and time travel and this and that. If you see exactly how Chris Evans, Captain America, went back to put the stones back, that has to answer those questions, right? Because right now we're sitting here, all of us, with questions about if Captain America just went back and put the stones back and lived out his life having sex with Peggy Carter, did he just like let 9/11 happen? Right? Like why would he do that? That'd be weird. Yeah. That'd be a weird thing for Captain America to do, right? Which, by the way, 9/11 is very like canonically true in Marvel, based on Iron Man and based on all of their skyline shots of New York City and based off of, you know, how basically Iron Man gets to where he is and the villains of his movie. So like if that's the case, why didn't he like stop that, or like some any of the other shit you could imagine Captain America let at Columbine, for God's sakes, you know, like yeah. Why did he let those things happen, right? So
your points make a lot of those little Marvel simps sad, because they're like, I don't care, I don't want it to be that realistic,
right? And but
that,
I'm
and
with you
woke.
But that's the problem, is that they made themselves woke from the start when they yeah. when they made Iron Man what he is, and they made the storyline what it is, and from there they have backed themselves into a corner where they obviously creatively can get out of, because they didn't write the rules in stone, right? They describe time travel 17 different times in Avengers Endgame, and nobody's got a fucking clue how it works.
Well, the cool part about Disney Plus is that you don't need to have these huge blockbuster movies, and maybe a story like this takes a swing at a TV show. I don't know.
Sure.
I'm not saying it's probably not likely to happen, but
no,
you have a full new medium to tell the story.
It's definitely not likely. You definitely have as many opportunities as you want to make it happen. And potentially, like with Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, and Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, and the new Spider-Man movie, like maybe all of those, and Loki, of course, like maybe all of those time travel questions will be answered, and then you can do something like this and not have to worry about it breaking anybody's brains. Because right now, everybody's fucked up, man. Nobody knows how the stones got back to where they were. Nobody understands how it happened. Nobody understands how the timeline work. Is it now, are we in a branch timeline, or are we still in the prime timeline? Hopefully Loki answers some of that stuff. Hopefully Doctor Strange and Spider-Man don't explode our heads into just more confusion. And hopefully they start to give us some answers. But I think if they did anything with Captain America returning the stones, it would end any of the creative liberty that they might still have. Because right now, the directors of Endgame, the writers of Endgame, they don't agree on how time travel works. And that's what they want. Like, they don't want there to be concrete rules, because it makes it very easy to break your own rule, right? And yeah, we're kind of still working in a world where there's some, like, magic, right? Like, the Bifrost and Mjolnir don't really make any sense. But it's a comic book movie, so you don't need to have very strict rules. But if you make yourself very strict rules, and then you break those very strict rules, people on Reddit get very angry, and they start to cut off and eat their own penises, and they cannot have that.
We literally have to leave on that. There's no yes. other way we can talk about anything else after what you just said.
Yeah, I don't disagree. So, folks, this is the MCU for Dummies. If you are on Reddit and you are considering self-castration and eating your own penis, please
don't
call somebody. Please call a professional. Call us. Comment on the post. We'll get you help. But this was a recap of The Incredible Hulk and Thor 1. I think we're on the Avengers next week, man. I think it's time for Avengers. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but we are wrapping up the first slate, the big old slate leading to the first multi-hero film in the Avengers. Oh, yeah. And one of the biggest cultural films of our lifetime, leading to the rest of the MCU. But before we get there, folks, please like and smash the subscribe button. After you're done listening to this, go over to the Mets Exchange, do the same thing over there, and then on the corner booth, current events, politics, entertainment, etc., etc. Lots of fun here on the Corner Booth Network. So please give us a follow. We are going to be more active on social media, so get your follow buttons under your thumbs, folks, and get ready for us, because we're going to start spitting the content at you like a llama, like a nasty old llama just walking up to you and spitting on you. All right. That's going to be it. I'm losing my mind. So I'm dummy number one, Ken. That's dummy number two, Lou. This has been the MCU for Dummies, and we will see you next time.